Okay, everyone. I want to say to the Chinese, Wai Aini, thank you for being with us and for helping us pray. We love you. Wai Aini. And to the Koreans, Sarang Heyo. That too means I love you in my Korean language. And we thank you for joining us. We really do. All of us just love you. We're so glad you're here. And then to the Americans, I say, I love you. We all love you. So here we are together, enjoying the presence of God together, being anointed by His Spirit to bring forth His heart and His will in the earth. I want to share with you three visions, and they were the visions. It was more than, they were more than visions. They were, I would have a dream, wake up, an angel would be standing beside me, and he would pick me up and take me to the area of the world that the dream I just had pertained to. When he showed me everything he wanted me to see, he brought me back to the room I was in, and I cried myself to sleep. It was so horrendous what I was shown. I just couldn't quit crying, so I would cry myself to sleep. Then I would be given another dream and another area in the world that that particular dream pertained to. I would awake from like the travesty of the dream, and that same angel would be standing beside me. He'd take me by the hand and take me to that area so that I could see in real time what had happened. And it was exactly what I saw in the dream. Now, knowing all that, you're going to hear two visions from me that fall into that category. So it was dream, being picked up by an angel, taken to the area where that dream pertained to the future that I had seen, and then back for another dream, and then out for another visit. So, but I also have here a vision, an experience by Chuck Colson. And it's amazing how these three fit together. I'm just astounded. And you probably didn't know that Chuck Colson was a visionary. I don't know how many visions he had, but if they were all as powerful as the one I'm going to read to you, it's a sad thing we didn't get to see those visions. He really wasn't known for this thing, you know, in the midst of what some might call the more spiritual movement of moving in the gifts of the Spirit. I think he was Baptist or something of that nature. But he was a very godly man. And God talked to him, and he talked to him through visions. And there were times even that the visions were so powerful and so important, he'd call his good friend on Focus on the Family, tell him what happened, and he'd say, I want to have an interview with you, and I want you to share your visions. So some of his visions were shared publicly. And I really believe that the only vision I have that goes with what I'm going to read tonight was one of those visions. So I've got down here, vision of Islam. The angel of the Lord visited me many times one night I was actually ministering in New York when this happened. And was staying in an apartment that the ministry provided me. And one of the gals that worked with me attended that particular series of meetings. So she was in that apartment when all of this took place. But she's with the Lord now, and I hope she's praying for me while I read this to you. So the angel of the Lord visited me. This is me, meaning Nita, many times one night. For your information, these visits occurred in the early 2000s. It could have been 2003, something like that. He repeatedly asked me to be careful to watch everything that was being played out before me in each scene. During the course of his visitations, I would either have a dream or he would pick me up and take me to the nations. The dreams would have the same overtones as things I would see when he would take me to the nations. And this is what I saw. Whether in a dream or in a visit, I would see the same kinds of things. For instance, he picked me up and took me to the African continent. He would take me to villages, small and large. And he would take me to cities, small and large. In the nations all over Africa, what I would see was ghastly. The men I would see would be equated to the present-day Islamic army, or worse. For instance, going into a village, they seemed to know what they were going to be dealing with. If the village was primarily men or women, they would divide and conquer based on that understanding. If the village was primarily families, their strategies would be altered to accommodate that information. Before they left that village, before these gunmen, terrorists, left each village, every living soul would be raped, maimed, looted, dismembered, and killed. If anyone was still alive when they finished, they would be burned alive when they burned the village to the ground. There was nothing left, not person nor building. After that, he would take me back to my room, comfort me, and I would cry myself to sleep. He would leave and return this time, giving me a dream and taking me to another part of Africa. I would see the same thing played out again and again. Incidentally, these men would run across the landscape, going from one radical ravaging of a community to another. It is like they couldn't move fast enough. After I saw all I was supposed to see, I would awaken and the angel would be standing beside my bed. He would instruct me to take his hand and he would carry me up into the heavens, and off to Africa we would go. To make a long story short, I would again be instructed to watch carefully everything that was happening before me. This was repeated, alternating between dream and experience until we covered all of Africa. Incidentally, this very thing has by now begun to occur in various places in Africa. But my night progressed, being taken to continents and nations all over the world. Wherever the military might would go, everyone would perish. And that, again, that was the terrorist military might. Everyone would perish. For instance, when they took me down to Indonesia, we found ourselves hovering over a particular Indonesian island. We stayed up in the sky, and he took me around the circumference of the island so I could see the outline of the island. Then we swooped down much closer to land, during which time I asked him where the people were. The angel shook his head in great sorrow and said, "There were none left. That is why I brought you here. I wanted you to see that they had ravaged all of the land and people until there was nothing left. All night long, I would go from dream to living experience watching these men rape, pillage every nation they would go into. We spanned the globe in our journey. Everywhere it was atrocities, and it was so painful to see. I finally told the angel early in the morning that I couldn't look at it anymore. I was in too much pain. His answer was, "Your father knew this would be the last trip, that this would be all you would be able to handle seeing." As I remember, the last nation I was taken to was France. You see what is happening there now. This is the beginning of horrors in the areas in which the Lord is not invited to intervene. Now, this is the second experience, the second vision, but it's by Colson, Chuck Colson. Below is a record of Colson's dream about Islam in America. 2006 New Year's dream, Chuck Colson. Something very strange happened to me this past week. I was seated in my library chair, mulling over current events, trying to make a few New Year's predictions, which is the custom for commentators. I was concentrating hard when suddenly I saw before my eyes a headline from the New York Times. This is Chuck Colson talking. It read, "Congress votes to end war. Troops ordered to abandon Iraq." The view changed. Just as in Vietnam, three decades ago, I saw Americans clinging to helicopters trying to get themselves out of Baghdad, along with friendly Shiite Muslims. There was massive confusion, bombs going off in the background. And then I saw pictures out of Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda had toppled the new Afghan government. Marines and soldiers again were hurriedly boarding choppers. "It can't be real," I thought. This is Chuck Colson still talking. "It can't be real," I thought, but it was. The next thing I saw was a picture of Palestine, where most of the Al-Qaeda terrorists had now gone. The Israeli government was in disarray, reeling under a series of huge bomb blasts in Jerusalem. Country after country was falling into the Islamic fascist. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt. For the most part, the terrorists simply refused to ship oil. And what they did ship was priced at over $150 a barrel. It was a worldwide crisis. Europe quickly signed a non-aggression pact with Al-Qaeda in exchange for oil. Then came the most devastating picture of all. Panic in the streets of Washington, D.C. as a dirty bomb exploded not a quarter of a mile from the Capitol, the huge sections of the city were cordoned off, uninhabitable. Even people with the best protective equipment suffered serious radiation burns. Projections were that the area would be off limits for years. Then came the bombing of the Holland Tunnel, connecting New York and New Jersey, then the collapse of the pillars of the Golden Gate Bridge. I want to say, just a brief intermission here, that I too have seen this same thing in Washington, D.C. As far as the eye could look, I was seeing burnings, buildings burning. The district, the whole district was on fire. And there was a woman running out from between buildings. And it was like the fire was following her. But she was screaming, D.C. is on fire. The whole city is going to burn down. Get help. So what he saw, I also saw, and I've shared it with some of you people online. The government threatened retaliation, of course, but there was no one to retaliate against. The Islamo-fascists were spread throughout the world, and it was impossible to strike against all the countries that were harboring them and being run by them. Osama bin Laden himself appeared on Al Jazeera, boasting that he had known all along that the Americans wouldn't fight. By now, most American television was not operating, but I could still get one channel. Talking heads were arguing frantically over how this could have happened. One man's voice stood out when he said, it was also foreseeable. Once you rule religion a private matter and declare all religions alike, no one in this country could understand the dimensions of a great religious struggle. No one understood the clash of civilizations or the evil Islamo-fascism. We didn't even have the language to describe religious beliefs anymore. Destruction was inevitable. And that's when I woke up in a cold sweat. This is still Chuck Colson. It was 5 a.m. I went immediately to the front door. Good, the newspaper was there. I flipped it open. There was nothing in the headlines except confirmation flight over Alito, and more quibbling over Iraq and all the usual banter that goes on endlessly in the press. But as I walked into the house, my knees were still shaking. It was only a dream. We're okay, I told myself. Or are we? This is the third vision, and again, it was mine. It happened that one night, I had spent much time in prayer over the Muslim issue. I finally got to sleep and then was awakened to a frightening vision. I saw a compound. Honestly, it didn't look like something that was abroad, but I can't tell you definitely that that was the case. In this compound were young men, I would say 20s to 30s. These men were coming into the compound in grounds as though they were unloading buses and coming in to be registered. I heard a voice, a man's voice. I can't remember what he said. Unfortunately, the book that the vision was written in, the book that I wrote this vision in earlier, was stolen after I left NOLA. So I'm going to try to give this to you by memory. Having said that, let's get back to the vision. As these men were piling into the compound, I heard a man's voice say an ode. Yes, maybe I would call it an ode. Saying something like this. He was calling all young Arab men from everywhere to arise, to sacrifice everything, and come and join the army of war. He would say something that seemed like it was out of Arabic literature, maybe two or three lines. What he was saying seemed like it was the crux of it all, but I can't remember the exact verbiage. For instance, you might equate it to this: all Arab men everywhere, put down your implements of work and pick up your swords and your band of fire. Give no excuse, sacrifice all. It's time to arise in war across the earth. As these words played out, the corresponding actions of the young men were of such a nature that it seemed that they were growing in war and maturing as soldiers by the minute. What was moderate became vengeful, hatred in a matter of minutes. By and large, most men answered the call spontaneously, immediately. The small percentage that wavered began to realize that their own lives would be at stake if they didn't respond. They knew this call to arms was a worldwide call for the destruction of all who were not Muslim. And that's all I could remember. But I will say one last thing, and that is, images that I have seen personally, some of those images was to have transpired already, but it didn't, and it didn't because we prayed. That doesn't mean that will not still happen. Prayer is the only answer. We must pray to God for the nations of the earth, because Satan has a plan and he's going to fulfill it if we do not bar up the direction so that he cannot. These are very powerful visions. They're enough to just hurt the depths of your heart. It's not a cartoon. It's not a movie. It's real life. And it is Satan's plan. It's just like the prophet was taken in to hear the counsels of their enemies, their kings, as they would discuss war with one another. And then he would go back and tell the armies what the plans were, so that Israel could stop anything before it transpired. And it's the same thing now. What he's doing now is no different with what he did then. He is willing to help us take a stand, and he is willing to do what is needed if we will but pray. There are some nations, I've said this before and got a lot of people very upset, but I want you to understand, God is God, and while he is love, mercy, and compassion, the Bible clearly tells us that God cannot be mocked. You mock him, he will discipline you. If you are doing what he's telling you not to do, warning you not to do, and you do it anyway, you're going to be disciplined according to your rebellion. And some of the nations that I was taken to see were experiencing the effects of the wrath of God on those nations for their rejection of his last call. So God will cry out for much longer than you and I could ever imagine. Hundreds of years pleading with the nation to restore their relationship with God and let him become their protectorate. But if the nation refuses God's help, refuses to let God's help arise in that nation, he has no choice but to stand back and watch the enemy's plans to be fulfilled. We don't judge God for that. We don't judge the prophet for that. It's not our place to judge anyone, not even those who are falling under the judgment of God. Our job is to have mercy and grace and to pray for the nations, the hearts of the nations, to be changed while time still exists. I can tell you cities. I'm not going to give their names because it's really not important. But I can tell you cities in the United States that the Lord told me would be taken down in a day for their rebellion against him. These were cities in America. And that happened. It happened in no time at all. I was shocked at how soon it happened. I have seen times when he has warned that a state or a nation state or an island would have to repent, humble themselves before God, and embrace his godhood, his leadership, his right as the reigning king. And when he gave the warning, they didn't do it. Or they may have in the beginning, but in the end, they again turned back to their foreign gods. Now I can tell you of the churches in the book of Revelation, the Ephesian church was warned about that very thing and what would happen to them if they didn't repent. Well, they did repent and they did turn. But in less than 60 years, they were right back into their idolatry. And that city died, and it's never been restored, even to this day. So we don't get mad at God. He's a just ruler. He loves people. He wants to save people. But he can't make you want to be saved by him. And he can't make you worship him. Because that's not the way he created the human will. So just know that as I've been taken to nations all over the earth and given to see so much devastation, and the same being true of Chuck Colson, this is a warning. It is a warning. Pray for these nations that they will repent and return to righteousness and to God. And God will bless you for it.